Welcome to Sarotare's Daily Reading, number 753, for March 31st, 2026. Richard opens this one by noting a theme. Today's list digs into the how of our work. How we architect systems, how we stay motivated on products people dislike, how we think about AI in our teams, and how we swap to cloud-managed services. Let's get into it. First up is a post from Derek Comartin at Code Opinion asking whether event-driven architecture is overkill for most apps. Derek's main point is that people confuse scaling with the actual reason you'd reach for events. Events aren't about handling more traffic. They're about decoupling responsibilities and time. When a package gets delivered, the act of recording that delivery is one responsibility. Sending a push notification, an SMS, or a webhook, those are separate concerns that should react independently. The delivery already happened. The decision was already made. Other parts of the system respond to that fact. Derek also draws a sharp line between commands and events. A command is an instruction. Do this thing. An event is a statement of fact. This thing happened. And he points out that event sourcing, which records state as a series of events, is an entirely different utility from using events as notifications. If you're confused by event-driven architecture, this post is a great place to start untangling the concepts. Next, Google and the Royal Society have teamed up on a notebook LM project exploring Benjamin Franklin's scientific discoveries. They've loaded Franklin's original 18th-century papers, manuscripts, and handwritten letters from the Royal Society archives into Notebook LM, where you can chat with the content, listen to an AI-generated audio, discussion, tracing. Franklin's evolution from British loyalist to American revolutionary, watch video overviews, and even take a quiz on his scientific concepts. It's a really cool demonstration of what becomes possible when you pair rich archival material with interactive AI tools. Now for something more alarming. On March 31st, an unknown threat actor compromised the NPM account of an Axios maintainer and published two malicious versions of the popular JavaScript HTTP library, versions 1.14.21 and VoIP 30.4. Axios is present in about 80% of cloud and code environments, and gets downloaded roughly 100 million times per week, so even a few hours of exposure had real impact. The malicious versions introduced a dependency on a trojanized package called Plain Crypto.js, which dropped a lightweight remote access trojan that beaconed to a command and control server every 60 seconds. The payloads covered macOS, Windows, and Linux. Wiz, who published the analysis, observed execution in about 3% of affected environments. If you use Axios, audit your environment now. This is the second major supply chain attack on a popular NPM dependency in just 1 week. Shifting gears completely, A16ZS published a deep dive on the construction industry's software problem. The core fact: every building you've ever been in was designed by software built in 1997. The architecture, engineering, and construction industry is a $13 trillion global sector that technology has largely bypassed. Most firms are still running desktop applications from the late 1990s, not connected to the cloud. Construction professionals spend 35% of their time on non-productive activities like hunting for project information and dealing with rework. 85% of construction projects exceed their budgets. The dominant tool, Autodesk's Revit, has over 95% market share and does roughly $3 billion in annual recurring revenue. It's the Excel of construction. The article makes the case that this is one of the biggest opportunities for software disruption remaining, precisely because the incumbent tooling is so deeply entrenched and so far behind. Sean Gedeka, a GitHub engineer, wrote a thoughtful piece on what it's like to work on products people hate. He's worked on Copilot during the period when many people thought it was subpar, and before that, on a Zendesk app marketplace that was useful but never loved. His key insight The quality of the engineering doesn't predict whether users will love the product. Some beloved features have shaky engineering inside, and some beautifully architected features fail miserably. Working on hated products forces you to accept how little control individual engineers have over user sentiment. But there's a silver lining. People only hate products they're actually using. A hated product is providing value to someone. If you're thick-skinned enough, making a widely used but annoying product slightly better is pretty high-impact work. Matt Assay at InfoWorld wrote about how AI is splitting companies into two groups. He shares two conversations from London, one with a hedge fund head of engineering whose teams have fleets of agents in full production and all code is written by LLMs, and another with a data engineer at a retail bank where there are no agents and sparse LLM use. McKinsey data backs up this unevenness. 88% of companies say they use AI somewhere, but only a third are actually scaling it. And here's the encouraging data point. Engineering job openings are at their highest in 3 years, up 78%. 45% of those roles are entry and mid-level. So no, AI is not eliminating junior developer jobs. It's changing what companies want from engineers. The real divide isn't between companies that have access to AI and those that don't. It's between teams that have learned to integrate AI into repeatable work and teams still treating it as a side. Experiment. Google's Mete Atamel wrote a helpful explainer on the Agent2UI protocol, or A2UI, and how it works with the Agent Development Kit. A2UI is a generative UI protocol that lets AI agents produce rich, interactive user interfaces. When a user asks an agent a question, the agent can return not just text but UI descriptions, cards, buttons, text fields, lists, that renderers convert into native components on web, mobile, or desktop. The key distinction, AGUI, connects your application to the agentic backend, while A2UI is the spec agents use to describe the UI they want to render. They're complementary, not competing. Also from Google, ADK Go 1.2.0 just shipped. This is the Agent Development Kit for Go, bringing features like native OpenTelemetry, tracing for debugging agent behavior, a plugin system for injecting cross-cutting concerns like retry and reflect, self-healing logic, human-in-the-loop confirmations for sensitive operations, and YAML-based agent configuration. For anyone building production-grade AI agents in Go, this is a significant milestone. Staying in the Google ecosystem, there's a guide on building production-ready AI agents with Google-managed MCP servers. MCP, the Model Context Protocol, is becoming how AI agents communicate with external services. Google's managed endpoints let agents securely interact with Maps, BigQuery, Kubernetes Engine, Cloud Run, and more. The post walks through security features including IAM, deny policies that can block specific tool calls at the platform level regardless of what the LLM decides to do, and model armor for scanning all MCP. Traffic for prompt injection and malicious content. Whether you go managed or self-hosted, MCP is going to find its way into many AI applications. Mark Hazel, the organizer of DevOx UK, shared his perspective on why tech conferences aren't dead, but why we go is changing. The argument is straightforward. We don't attend conferences to learn things we could Google. We go for deep focus away from Slack and email, conversations with peers facing similar problems, and structured learning in an environment where you can talk to the person next to you who might have already solved your problem. Mark's philosophy at DevOx is to create an environment where everyone is equal. No private speaker rooms. Everyone welcome and respected. When people feel comfortable, real connections follow naturally. Google Cloud published a piece on Spanner's multi-model capabilities for the agentic AI era. The pitch is that instead of running separate specialized databases for relational, key value, graph, vector, and full text search workloads, you can consolidate into Spanner. Make My Trip shared their experience. Consolidating MongoDB, Neo4j, Elasticsearch, and CodeRunt into a single Spanner instance, achieving a 75% reduction in operational complexity and improving their AI answer quality score by 9%. It's a compelling case for convergent databases, especially as AI workloads demand simultaneous access to multiple data models. VentureBeat ran a piece from Andrew Filev at Zencoder about product managers and designers shipping code directly. His team found that when AI collapsed implementation costs, the bottleneck shifted from engineering capacity to decision velocity. All the coordination mechanisms they'd built, specs, tickets, handoffs, backlog grooming, became the slowest part. One of their PMs built and shipped a feature in a single day. A designer fixed a visual drift in the IDE plugin directly without filing a ticket. The compound effect is that when people build directly, their specifications get sharper, which produces better agent output, which means fewer iteration cycles. The org is becoming one where everyone ships. Finally, IDDummy shared how they scaled to 145 million users while reducing operational risk by migrating 50 terabytes of data to Google Cloud's AlloyDB. They handle up to 40,000 users per minute, and during the last tax season, processed over 100 transactions per second without issues. They're using AlloyDB's red pools as data clean rooms for fraud analysts, and they've seen a 40% reduction in their data team's work completion time. That's number 753. A lot of how we work stories today. From how to think about event-driven architecture, to how to cope when users hate your product, to how AI is restructuring organizations, and even who gets to ship code. Plus a couple of reminders that supply chain security is an ongoing war, and that some of the biggest industries on Earth are still running on decades-old software. Until next time.